I'm here on Knockline Road talking to Michael Brennan. Michael, a couple of things that we didn't talk about the last day. The kind of people that lived around here. Who grew up and
well, now,
lived around here?
One of the people that comes to mind is Dave Allen, who was a comedian in England. He was on the BBC and Australian television. Dave grew up as David Tynan O'Mahony, and he lived with his family in Cherryfield House on the Firhouse Road, which is about 300 yards from here. Now, when we were all growing up, David and his brothers John and Peter, and my brothers Peter, Joe and Eddie, we all swam in the River Dodder in the summer, because at that time crowds of lads would come from Drimna, Walkinstown, Crumlin. They all came to swim in the Dodder. In the summer, it was a favourite pastime. And so when Dave Allen, as he was later known, his trade name was David O'Mahony, we all swam together in the River Dodder. And his aunt was Catherine Tynan O'Mahony, the author, who lived in Whitehall on the Belgard Road.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it amazing that Austin Clark grew up here as well?
Austin Clark was a poet and a writer. Austin Clark lived in a house which was known as Bridge House at Templo Bridge. And outside my house, we had a stream, and there was a bridge, and there was a little wall. And almost every other day, Austin Clark came up here and sat on the wall to compose his poetry. And it was a regular feature for us to get down into the under the bridge before he would come, and sit down there nice and quiet listening to him. And he could sit there. We used to call him the Sandyman Port. He wore a long black coat and a very wide trilby hat. He was a very nice man to talk to, and very polite. And he didn't mind us listening to him, I'm sure, because he probably didn't even know we were there. But he lived, his house, he died, and his house was knocked down eventually for to widen Templo Bridge. Now, I know that it was burnt before it was knocked down, but the road had been widened up to the house, and then the house went on fire, and then it was demolished. And that, I think, was in the late 70s, early 80s. Austin Clark's house was demolished.
And the most extraordinary part of this area here, I suppose, is, as you told me the last day, is the amount of changes, with the buildings and that, and also the cars. And of course the cars needed petrol. And were there local petrol stations locally?
Temple Oak Village, there was a garage in Temple Oak Village, and at that time the petrol pumps would be on the footpath. There was also, Landy's had one in Rathfarnham Village. Other than that, perhaps Terenure, but when the Landys built the bakery here in Knockline in 1954, they had two petrol pumps here for their own bread vans. It wasn't sold to the public. And they got the petrol from a company called Munster Sims. And because we were literally out in the country at the time, they had to put a sign up outside, a huge big sign with the MS on it for Munster Sims, so that the petrol lorries would know where to come with the petrol. The bakery closed down about 1960, and sometime after that there was a petrol strike, and the pumps were opened up again, and the petrol was sold off to somebody who opened up the pumps, and eventually then the whole place was converted into a filling station, which it is now today.
Mm-hmm. And during the war years, petrol was rationed.
Oh yes, I think that was possibly the reason for so few cars on the road, was because people couldn't get petrol. I think that was, I'd say that was the main, as I said before, everybody had horses. I know after, when the war ended, the old Ferguson 20 TVO tractors came in, where they started them on petrol and then switched them over to a type of paraffin oil to run them. And they took over from the horses, and then the cars started gradually coming on the road. And from there, there was a noticeable increase in the cars after that. I'd say people may have had them during the war, but couldn't use them because they couldn't get petrol.
Mm-hmm. As a young lad, did you see, were people having fun with cars? Were they racing them? And
No, my memory of cars on the road, I think if they were doing about 40 miles an hour at the time they were flying.
But was there a kind of a racetrack around
Yes,
here?
the racing cars. There was a thing called the Talla Circuit, which was Talla Road, Fairhouse Road, and Old Bond Road, and we had both motorcycle and motor car racing on that circuit. And I think that would go on. I'm not sure how frequent it was, but it lasted up to about 1948, and the roads at the time would be closed, and there were roadblocks on Templelow Bridge during the war. And the thing about the motorcycle and the motor car racing, it was like a chicane on Templelow Bridge, where they had to literally stop coming across the bridge to get through the roadblocks. And the smell of burning rubber and burning oil, that's something I think that will linger forever. Because along where the Ballyroan Road is now, there was a wire fence and there was a cornfield. And many of the bikes and cars that came up from Templelow Bridge, they ended up in the wire where they couldn't make the bend. But that was also at the Laney's pub. There was a humpback bridge and a bend just a few yards beyond the Laney's pub, and that was a real hazard, because not alone were you going over the humpback bridge, but the road veered to the right on top of the bridge, and that one. But the biggest run they had was from Talla to Templelow Bridge, and they got a great run on the bikes and the cars on Templelow Bridge, from Talla to Templelow Bridge.
And who were they? Who were the people?
I know, I can remember that the motorbike driver. There was Ernie Lyons, Reg Armstrong, and Stanley Woods. And I know we all eventually got bicycles, and we were all flying around, so we all got the name of somebody, whether it was Stanley Woods or. But they were the only three that I can remember that stands out in my mind. And from my memory, they were motorbike riders rather than car drivers.
Were you reenacting or taking them off as
Oh, so that was it.
youngsters?
Yeah, bicycles at the time. Very few people had bicycles, but eventually, when you did get a bicycle, like our young fellas now, I suppose, with BMXs and everything else, we were the same. When we got a bike, like we were Stanley Woods and Ernie Lyons on the bikes too. But
Would you go on the same circuit?
not at all. I'd say.
Where was the circuit exactly now?
They started off, I think, in Talla Village outside the Priory. They came down the Talla Road, turned right at Templelow Bridge, along what a Bridge Road, up to what's now the Blue Haven pub, and they turned right there up the Firhouse Road all the way to Old Bon. And when they got to the crossroads at Bridget Burke's pub, they turned right and straight across from there to Talla. So that was known as the Talla Circuit.
And you must have had fond memories of those days watching. Was it all happened on a Sunday afternoon?
I've an idea that it happened on a Saturday. But it was a big thing. The roads would be closed in advance, and it was, I think, practically all of that circuit. There were fields on both sides, so there was no problem getting a vantage point to watch them.
But did it attract crowds?
Oh, God, it did. Oh, it did attack the crowd, because like this, I suppose now, I think they may have actually gone to the Phoenix Park from the Talla Circuit, and they still hold motor racing in the Phoenix Park. I think it's in August, late August, September. So they may have actually gone there, but it did attract big crowds at the time. It was
And when did it move over to Mondello? Do you remember that when that opened first?
I do, but I couldn't put a year on it. I could not put a year now on when. I'd say I might be wrong in thinking it could be 30, 35 years ago since Mondello opened, but that's something that I'm not sure of.
But there was always a kind of tendency to go out and race cars and race motorbikes was.
Yeah, like as I said, the average cars at that time, they didn't appear to have the speed that saloon cars have nowadays. As I say, if somebody was driving now at 40 miles an hour was fast when you consider the width of the roads. Like if you take the width of Knockline Road at the time, it was quite narrow. So you didn't really have, even Fairhouse Road and the Talla Road had quite a few bends on it. So you didn't actually have the roads, the vision now, where you can drive along now and you can see for way ahead of you. But at that time you didn't, because you were coming into bends all of the time.
And the roads themselves, I'd say,
And
wouldn't be
the
in the
roads
best.
then, at that time they were
Were
they,
they dust
no,
roads?
it was tar and chip. They tarred the road with one machine, and then they came along and they spread chippings on it, and then they rolled it in. And
was there a quarry nearby?
There was a quarry in Woodtown, Woodtown Manor. There was a quarry at Woodtown Manor. It was a stone quarry, and they used to blast there at 5 o'clock in the evening and 12 o'clock on Saturday, and you could set your clock by the time that this would go off. Now, at that time, it was all fields from here to the quarry, so the sound would carry without any trouble. But I do remember the windows rattling when the blast went off, and that quarry, I think, finished up in possibly in the late mid maybe 1950s. I think that that's.
But blasting would go on there on a regular basis.
Oh yeah, they did quite a bit of they did quite a bit, because I remember one time there was a bin strike or something on, and they actually they opened up. I'm sure it was. It might not have been a bin strike, but it may have been a strike on the tip heads, because they opened up the quarry there to allow tipping in the quarry to fill it up. So I imagine it was probably builder's rubble or something. So it may well be that the local tip at the time would have been Born Brina, and there was some dispute on anyway that it wasn't open. So I imagine that quarry now is probably completely filled up.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember stones being drawn from it, and were they used on the roads?
I don't know what they did with the stone from it now, whether it was used for chippings for the road. It may well have been, because at that time they had these tar boilers, which was towed by a tractor, and they had a fire under it, and that heated up the tar, and then a machine spread a layer of tar, and another one came along and spread the stones on top, and then the steamroller would roll it in. But it was very rough. And I know that the tires of the old horse cart, you'd hear them crunching over it. It would take probably a few years for it to get smooth again. But that was how they resurfaced the road, was tar and chips.
Mm-hmm. Some of the houses down here now were magnificent, fine big houses.
They were. The one that comes to mind now is which is now called the Rutland Centre, was Knocklyon House. And maybe around 1950, a man called Joe Griffin moved in there. Joe owned the Redbreast Preserving Company up on the Belgarde Road. And Joe had racehorses, and he won the Grand National 3 times. He won it with a horse called Early Mist, Royal Tan, and Quair Times. I think it was 1952, 53, and 55. Were the 3 years that he won the Grand National. And that was a great thing around here then, to think that someone local would really have a winner of the Grand National.
Mm-hmm. So, and, was he a character himself, Joe Griffin?
I know he had a Buick. He had a chauffeur used to drive. He had this American car, a Buick. And he had a chauffeur used to drive him around, but he probably was. But we would have just maybe seen him going up and down the road, really, in the car. Like, we wouldn't really have had much to do with him, really, other than that.
What about the races then? You spoke about horses. Where would you go to the races?
The Leopardstown, I suppose, and the Curra would be the.
And
the,
did you go often?
No, I didn't. No, and the Phoenix Park, of course, was a race course then too. The Phoenix Park was working. So the Phoenix Park, Leopardstown, and the Curra would have been the mm-hmm. Ferry House, of course, and Nace. There were quite a few around still there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, and did lots of people attend the races? And
They would have. Yeah, I would have been too young, like, at that time, to know too much about racing, because I didn't really. I never went to them myself. So I expect you'd see the reports on the papers. I think it was the Irish Press or the Sunday Press. They used to have pictures of all the horses and the racing on on a regular basis.
I suppose one of your big memories would have been during the war years, and rationing was a big thing.
Rationing was a big thing, and I know that my mother had a ration book, which I still have in the house somewhere. And I think tea was scarce. Just about a lot of the food products that would be imported were scarce. And I remember the shell cocoa and Indian meal, when you couldn't get porridge meal, there was I think Indian meal. It was yellow in colour, and it was made up similar to porridge, but it wasn't terrible sweet. wasn't terribly sweet. I suppose the other thing that strikes me was that when the war ended was the white bread. The first time I saw white bread, I saw a batch loaf, and it was almost pure white and spongy. You could squeeze it and it'd come back up again. But before that, you see, during the war, it was mostly wheat and meal because you couldn't get white flour. And it was a whole, I think, a whole new era when the flour came back on the market again.
And this was all pre-supermarkets now then. And you
Oh,
went to
yeah.
your local
We
grocery.
had down in Temple Oak Village, you had John Fenlon had a grocery shop and Mick Kavanagh. And Kavanagh's, it was one of these shops that we got the part of an aisle there for the lamps. And I think it was probably there that we brought the battery from the radio to get it charged. Was down there. There were two types. There was a wet battery which you could get charged, and then there was a radio come out with a 6-volt dry battery. But when it wore out, you just had to buy a new one. Then Arthur Kinsler then had the post office in the village. So and where the AIB is in Temple Oak Village, that was a butcher shop. Jordan's had a butcher shop there, and next door to that, where the post office was until last year or so, that was where Jack Fenlon had the shop. And then they built the four shops on the right-hand side of the village, opposite Kavanagh's, and Jack Fenlon took one of those because they were bigger shops. And there was a chemist, which is still there today, and Allen's was the news agents, and then Bulger's was an electrical shop. Because we got the electric light here in 1955, and like an electrical shop then, like it was a great idea where you could go down and buy switches, and like for anyone that knew how to fit them, it was a great idea where you could actually go down and fit them. Because I still have the original oil lamps which we used here in the house. I still have them, and they're in perfect working order. And
Yeah, but you walk into these grocery shops,
oh yes,
and it was a different
yeah.
type
You see,
of shopping in those days.
when you walked into a grocery shop, then there was a counter, and there were people serving behind, and most everything that they did was weighed. You know, if you wanted, when you wanted sugar, they weighed the amount that you wanted, and the same with potatoes, where now you go in and they're all pre-packed. But in those days, practically, you picked up nothing yourself. You asked for it over the counter. And then I remember Fenlon's, they had these lads on the carrier bikes, and you could go down with your order, and then they would deliver it on
Messenger bike.
messenger boys on the carrier bikes. They would deliver them. That a lot of the shops that time, they especially the grocery shops, they sold bran and pollard and animal food stuffs as well. Because I remember when the chemist opened, they had a veterinary section, like in the chemist, inside where they would sell, ointments and so forth, like that farmers could use themselves. And
What were the brands being sold in there now in that shop down in Temple Hill?
Well, you see, you had in Dublin, you had Kennedy's bread, you had Boland's bread, you had Johnston Mooney and O'Brien, you had Downs, and I think there may have been another one. And at the time, the bread was delivered by horse and dray. The bakeries had horse-drawn vehicles. There were little closed wagons which they went around and delivered to the doors. There was also the laundries. There was the Bloomfield and Rathfarnham. There was Terenure Laundry and the Dublin Laundry, which was under the Nine Arches at Milltown. And they sent around people in horse and drays during the week, and they collected the washing, and then they brought it back on Friday. And that was before washing machines came in, like that was the that. And then after that, then launderettes came in, I think, and people started going there. But in a lot of the cases, like for instance, Jack Fenlon bought a Ford motor van for delivering the groceries around. And of course, if you have a fella delivering groceries in a van around, and people will go to you quicker, because a lot of people then they could ring the order in and have the groceries delivered. And that time the messenger boys went out. They went out in the morning on bikes, and they picked different roads, and they went around collecting the orders from people, and then to be delivered in the afternoon. So like times changed a lot. after that, for the simple reason that the supermarket came probably a lot impersonal. I'm sure that John Fenlon knew everybody who crossed the door of his shop. He knew them personally. And then you got to know the staff behind the counter. And like, Fenlon's could have maybe up to a half dozen people in the shop in behind the counter, because you told them what you want and they went off and got it and brought it down and put it up in front of you. And I know McGee's in Terenure was a big grocery shop where they had a horse and dray delivering, and they would have been, I think, on a bigger scale now than Fenlon's, and people would get the 49 bus to Terenure and maybe go into what was McGee's. H. Williams took the shop over afterwards, and I think it's still a supermarket there now today, but I'm not sure who's running it now.
Mm-hmm. But and from the shop then, you get all the different smells.
The minute you went into the shop, you know, you got the vegetables, because you see most everything was fresh. Like, you got the smell of cabbage and potatoes and lettuce. And as I say, if they were selling bran or some of these animal foods like that had a sweet smell, and you would get that also. But there was a distinct, and then they used to slice up the bacon on the counter with the machine. Like, that was just sliced up on the counter. How much do you want, missus? And then they just sliced up whatever you wanted and gave it out to you. So a lot of us, a lot of the personal touch, I think, went out when the supermarket came in. Now, I know that supermarket suits an awful lot of people. The same applied to the milk. I remember when the farmers locally, they went around the doors delivering the milk with the churns with the tap on the back of it. And they went around the houses like it before HB. Hughes Brothers, when they started in Rathfarnham, I think they had my father told me they had about 140 cows, and they started this pasteurisation. They were hand milking cows and delivering it, and then they started the pasteurisation, and then it developed into HB Dairies, where all the farmers actually brought the milk to them. And then they dispensed it from there. But like, the local farmers here each had their own rounds or routes where they would just go delivering milk to the people in houses. And then some of them delivered the milk direct to hotels. Mm-hmm. They didn't deliver to houses at all. So like, when you went into to the grocery shop, you knew when you went in the door what shop you were in by the smells you got from it. Like they were all different. Like the sacks of potatoes would be on the floor and the weighing scales, and if you wanted a stone, they just tipped them in and weigh it out for you.
What about the packaging? You know, the tea chests.
You get the
smell of tea.
The tea came in the
and
tea.
And then the brown bread for packing.
That's right. And then they had the sugar in the brown paper bags. And there was the pound bags and the 2 pound. And the same with jam. A thing you rarely ever see now, I think, is a 2 pound jam pot. That was a common thing, was a 2 pound jam pot, where the chivers and there was a fruit farm down in Rathfarnham. Lambs, I think, had it. It's down where Nutgrove Shopping Centre is. And in the summertime, when you were going to school, when you got the holidays, you got about sixpence a pound, I think, for picking fruit down there. But I think we used to eat more than what you picked, what they got, because you lived off it for the day. And like strawberries, raspberries, black currants, all that sort of thing, they grew it down there, where what place called Holy Lands they call it now, and there was a fruit farm down there. So like, I can remember we used to pick blackberries in the summer and mushrooms, and you could bring them down to in the old chip baskets, and you could bring them down to Devney's in Terenure, and he gave you 5 bob a chip.
And that was extra pocket money.
And then he sold them on, you see.
Would that happen with other, for example, rabbits, hares, live? Did you go snaring around here?
No, I was never involved in that at all. But I'm sure it probably did. But I was never involved in that at all. That was just something that I was never got involved in at all. Like we went out and chased rabbits with dogs, but that was only for fun. Yeah. There was another thing happened now on New Year's Day. The hunt used to come by here, started at the Yellow House in Rathfarnham, came up the Ballyboden Road and across the fields, and I think it ended up at Bridget Burke's in Old Bond. It was actually a drag hunt. They didn't hunt a fox at all. A man called Grownie would start off in the morning with this sack with some scent on it, and he would drag that over his shoulder with a rope. And he'd come up all across the fields and head out then towards Cross Firhouse. And I remember one occasion, the dogs were let out too soon, and he ended up climbing a tree. because the dogs followed the scent and the horses had to jump the ditches and follow the dogs. But they didn't. I never knew them to follow a fox. It was always what they called a drag hunt, and that was on New Year's Day. That all these people came around on horses, and that was a big day out because you knew in advance they were coming. And then some of them, they had to jump ditches and jump hedges, and some of them wouldn't jump over a rope if it was lying on the ground, you know, and they end up not going any further because a lot of them, they had to just jump hedges as they were.
You probably would have remembered the tail end of the big house and the gentry.
Yeah, I know one house that you see around here now, there's very, very few of the old houses left. Like there was a house on Scholarstown Road, Woodfield, and that was owned by Hemp and Stalls of Grafton Street. They lived in it. Delaford House on the Firhouse Road was like a big bungalow at the front and extended to about three storey at the back. There was a mill at the back of it, and at the turn of the 19th century, it was a roadside inn. That was knocked down. Cherryfield House was knocked down, which was a fine house. Hayfield on the Scholarstown Road, it just went into dereliction. Now, there was another man lived up locally too, Oisin Kelly the sculptor. Oisin lived in a house called Prospect, and its demise was the M50, because it was right in the line of the M50, and it up to the top of Knockline Road, and that was knocked down when the M50 was getting built. Castlefield House, which was also on the Knockline Road. There's an estate up the road now called Castlefield, but it's not built where Castlefield House was. I think the builders got in ahead of the Castlefield lands being sold, and they called the next place, because the land they called Castlefield was actually the land belonging to Prospect House, where Oisin Kelly lived. Now, there was a Colonel Newman lived in Castlefield House, and the last people that I know of to occupy that were the Hardy Christmas.
Were they?
They were the last people to walk. Now, that house was knocked down also. Woodbrook House, which is a farmhouse up the road here, Woodbrook House was knocked down and demolished. Mount Alton House, which was next opposite Knockline House, Mount Alton House was knocked down. So there was a number of big houses in the area were knocked down, and like I often wondered, like, why they maybe couldn't have been put to other use. In Delaney's pub up in Firhouse, there are actually pictures of some of these houses. Mm-hmm. I don't know who painted them, but there are pictures of some of them. There were some fine houses in Knockline. Now, granted, there's a few left, and let's hope, you know, like, there's families living in them, so maybe they'll last a little bit longer. But it was sad to see, as I said, all the land around here belonged to somebody, and most of the land ended up at a big house, and most of those houses now are gone.
It's the end of an era. Really,
it's the end of an era. Like, I know the upkeep on them and all that would be like Delaford House. My longest memory was Mrs. Murphy. Now, Mrs. Murphy had two sisters where the Blue Haven pub is, started off as a drapery shop when it was built. That was built around 1950, I think. And where Sherry Fitzgerald is was a sweet shop and newspapers, and the one next door was a drapery shop. And the two ladies, they opened a drapery shop where the Blue Haven pub is. They were sisters of Mrs. Murphy, who and Delaford Estate during the war, there was a thing came in called compulsory tillage, where people were obliged by law to till the land to grow crops. And I remember Delaford Estate was one of the local estates at that time, because that land was always rented. It wasn't, I never remember it being farmed by the people who owned it. It was always rented out. So during the war, there was a compulsory tillage order put on it, which meant that it had to be rented to somebody who would plough it up and grow crops on it.
What about the place names?
Knockline is translated into the Hill of the Pool. That now I know is the translation, or Knocknalima. But other than that, I don't know. Now, Stocking Lane is off Scholarstown Road, which is not too far from here. Apparently, the British Army had a stockpiling depot on Stocking Lane. And Stocking Lane led to the military road, which went across the mountain to Glendalough, out that direction. And that's where Stocking Lane got its name from. There was a depot for stockpiling weapons, where if, I suppose, whatever armies they had here, that was where they would go to get their weapons when they were required.
But, you know, there are other names, like Firhouse.
Yeah. Firhouse is broken down from a family called Fira. A family called Fira, the nuns, I think, came to Firhouse Convent in possibly the mid-1800s, maybe say 1840 or something. And Firhouse Convent House was, I think, the original Firhouse. The Fira family lived in it. And that, I believe, is where the name of Firhouse came from.
And what order of nuns?
The Carmelites.
And who brought them in?
I don't know who brought them in, but they're the closed order. I've been up there at the convent now in the past couple of years, and they did actually come out, because the Pope said to them, you know, come out, because when we were children, we went to mass up there in our horse and trap on a Sunday morning, and you could hear the nuns singing, but you could never see them. They were behind a screen. And it's only then when the Vatican Council, I think, said, no, you best come out and do some work. And so they came out. But I was up there a few years ago. The parish priest of the day in Knockline, he said to me about building an Easter altar and in the church for Lent. And they had one in the convent. So I said, well, I'll go and see what it's about. So I went up anyway, and I went in, and the nun brought me in to show me this Easter altar, and how I got involved in that. Knockline Parish is just around 30 years, and I've erected a crib in the church in Knockline since the day the parish was founded.
Have you really?
Yeah, every year.
But continuing with the place names now, Temple Oak, where is the temple?
I'll tell you where it is. It's Chocmail Oak. The temple, it's a little a ruined church opposite the Spawell. There's a cemetery beside the Spawell, and in the grounds of that, there's a ruined church. And that's Chocmail Oak.
Right. Terenure?
I can't elaborate on Terenure now. Terenure, I can't elaborate on that, because I do recall being told that the Temple Oak Road only came as far as the gates of Terenure College one time, that the gates actually into the college were down nearer to Terenure. A family called, I think it was Bourne, sold that college to the Carmelites.
Okay, so the land for the college.
Yes. So Terenure is an old village. I can't say too much about that. I can probably remember most of the shops that were in it, and the tram lines going from Rathfarnham, and the trams going down to Rathmines, Rathgardine, that direction.
We'll talk about the shops in Terenure in a moment, but keep going. Just moving out here, just out the road from Knockline. Well, you're really going out the country now, aren't you?
Yes. Like, when we were children, we used to wonder why on a Saturday and Sunday all the kids came out with their packs on their back, and they went up and they went into the field and had a picnic. Like, we were living out here and we could never see, like, why. It's only in later years that you realise, when they're living in the city, with just a front garden and a street outside, it's all concrete, that actually getting out here and going up the fields and picking blackberries, like, was probably a holiday on its own to them. But that was one of the things, in the same way as they used to come to swim in the Dodder. Hundreds, every evening, hundreds of children and youths and adults would come from, as I say, Walkinstown, Crumlin, Drimna, all those areas. They would come to, and all along the Dodder, from I know from Temple Oak Bridge to Old Bawn, there were different places where you could get down to the river, and it was quite deep in places.
And and I would imagine that you know, the seaside was British Bay. That was far away.
Yeah, well, the seaside at the time was Port Marnock and Sandymount. I remember once or twice, a few times we were brought, and it was either Sandymount or Port Marnock. That was where, and that was a big day out, because it was all, you went on the bus to it.
And it was quite a long drive.
It was a long, it was a long way out, yeah.
Yeah.
And then getting back was as big a problem as getting out to it, like, you know.
But getting to the Dodder was easier.
Oh, you just went down. And I remember my older brothers now and some other local fellas, they built a dam. And the dam was about 8 feet deep because the river had been sunk at the turn of the 19th century. The level of the River Dodder was lower to stop flooding. So currently it can be down, say, 10 feet, 12 feet to the water from the field level. So these fellas would build a dam across that, maybe 4 to 6 feet wide, and they used to get tar barrels and knock the ends out and put them into the dam to let the water through. But they created a swimming pool in the Dodder, and the water could be maybe 8 feet deep in it, and which meant you could dive off the top of the bank straight into it. But I remember just down at the end of the Knockline Road, where we used to swim with David O'Mahony, we were able to throw a sixpence in. The water was about 4 feet deep. You could throw a sixpence in and dive in and pick it off. The water was so clear. And then in the 70s, when all the building started all up around Albawn, the water got muddy and it was like bog water. And I think the swimming all stopped then.
Mm-hmm.
The Dodder got so dirty then that people just didn't swim in it anymore.
What about Albawn itself?
Albawn Bridge, there was a great place for swimming at Albawn Bridge, on the city side of Albawn Bridge. That was a great place for swimming. Now, there's a road there called Kiltipper Road. It runs up beside the River Dodder at Albawn. Now, that was always known as the Crusher Road because there was a stone-crushing building or plant just on the edge of the River Dodder at Albawn Bridge. And it's called Kiltipper now, but when I was young, it was always called the Crusher Road.
The Crusher.
Yeah, because they crushed the stone there.
My God. And Albawn itself, white. Where did that come from?
Sean Bardone. I don't know. There was Albawn House. Albawn House. There was. Wait, let's see now. Jordan's lived in Albawn House. It's knocked down. It's gone. Tim Muldoon Sr. lived in Ellenborough, which was on the Albawn Road on the opposite side to where Jordan's lived in Albawn House. And then young Tim, a nephew, he lived in Old Court House. The remains of the old castle is still just a bit of rock sticking up out of it on the old Court Road. So vast swaths of land were owned by individual families. Like, I know the two Muldoons never married. And they own hundreds of acres up there between them, and they never married. And you see, that time you'd see Tim Muldoon supplied, when HB Dairies had up to 100 horses, Muldoon supplied the hay, and that was delivered by horse and hay bogey from Albawn to. And the way they got to there was they went down Temple Oak Road, along the Dodder, and up by Mount Carmel. That's the way, because Nutgrove Avenue wasn't there. There was a market garden where Nutgrove Avenue's family called Kevlin owned it, and it stretched from the end of the Grange Road to Churchtown. But alongside that, if you're driving by, they've just closed down a filling station there. At the back of that, the walls are about 10 feet high, and there was a 4 foot passage behind that all the way from Rathfarnham to Churchtown called the Narrow Lanes.
That's interesting.
And you see, because Nutgrove Avenue wasn't there, the only way they could get the HB with the hay was to go down the Temple Oak Road and go up by the Mount Carmel.
And they had to take that route.
Yeah. Yes, and it was individual haystacks were drawn. And you could see 40 or 50 horses in a line drawn haystacks from Albawn to HB. See, it wasn't baled at the time, it was loose hay. Yeah.
Well, that was fascinating. Going back again now to Terenure, the shops and premises there.
One that's McGee's, as I say, the supermarket. It's a supermarket now, but it was a grocery store. O'Connor's was a drapery shop. Miss McIntyre had a sweet shop opposite O'Connor's. And I know that during the war and after, she used to give my father a supply of cigarettes. And you went down and you didn't have to ask. She would give you, it might be 10, depending on what she could get. She kept her customers supplied, Miss McIntyre. Then Devaney's was a grocery shop beside us. That's the fellow we used to sell the mushrooms and the blackberries to. You had, I think there was on the four corners, there were three banks and Vaughan's Pub on the three corners, the Royal Bank, Hibernian Bank, and there was no AIB then. The AIB was formed from the
The Munster and
Munson
Leinster.
and Leinster, and I think the Royal and the Bank of Ireland and the Hibernian, I think, formed Bank of Ireland, and the other three groups formed the
So it was
AIB.
a business area, was
Oh, it
it?
was a business area. Oh, yeah, and it was because a lot of people would go, like, from this area, they would just go down to Terenure to do their shopping. Like, you
Yeah,
see, the.
but professional business in banking business and.
Yeah, there was, as I said, there were three banks in it. There was a laundry in it. There was the Beechlawn Woolen Mills, which was opposite the old Classic Cinema in there. Keogh's owned it. Then you had at the back of O'Connor's shop beside the church, you had a dairy yard. Nolan's owned that one. Further down on Terenure Road, where Terenure House, I think it is now, it's a pub. Gallagher's had a dairy yard in there. And these were dairy yards where the cattle would be brought in for the winter, housed for the winter, and then come spring, then they'd all be taken out again. But that's where they would spend the winter.
What about boarding houses? I mean, was that a thing of the time?
Of bed and breakfast, there was, and not like the bed and breakfast of today. A lot of them had a landlady, and you went in and you rented your room, and she did the cooking and all the rest of it. And there were quite a few of those. Terenure now, the South Circular Road was a great place for that, and Ratgar Road, places like that, where people, I suppose, maybe women who had big houses there on their own, maybe handed down from mother to daughter, and they just carried on the business of boarding houses. Unlike the bed and breakfast now, where you go in and you have your own room and you come down for your breakfast night. That time, the landlady was in charge of the house.
Right. And restaurants. There weren't restaurants in
No,
the.
not
There
really.
were more
Cafes, you know.
cafes
Yeah,
and.
like if we went into town, there was one called Skybo's on Camden Street or Ranger Street, and if we went into town, my mother on the bus, she used to always bring us in there into Skybo's.
So mostly the if you wanted to be fed, you went to a hotel.
That's it.
That was it.
Yeah, that's it.
Where was the hotel?
Hotels. Well, in around town, you had the Gresham, you had the Shelbourne.
But out around here,
Over
like.
around here. Over around here. I don't remember any hotels out around here. No. I don't remember any hotels out around here at
Yeah,
all.
it wasn't a place to come
No.
to.
No.
But was it a place to come to?
Well, I
I mean,
mean,
did people come out here
up to 19.
on holiday
Up to
or.
1973, as I said, there was only about 12 or 13 houses on Knockline Road.
This. D direction coming out of Dublin City and heading south, you were heading towards Carlow, you were heading towards
Yeah,
Kilkenny and down to
on the
Wexford, yeah.
Blessington Road, yes.
Yes. Was it so? Would it have been in your early days growing up in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, traffic wise? You said there wasn't a lot of traffic, but did you notice that
No,
traffic was going that way?
they had up to the mid 1930s. They had the steam tram, which ran from Terenure to Blessington, and the pub in Templeogue was christened the morgue. And I believe the reason for that was there were so many people killed by the steam tram that they brought them in there and laid them out in the pub. Now, when Ryan's owned that, it was only just a two-story house on the side of the road. Long before it was, like, most of the pubs around here, like the Laneys and Morton's, before they were expanded, they were only just like two-story houses on the side of the road. The Jobstown Inn was another one. You see, you didn't have the spa. Well, in Talla Village, you had Molloy's, and you had what's they called the Dragon on the other side, on the Priory side, was Murphy's Pub. You had a few shops there too, not very many.
The tram went all the way to
Went
Blessington.
all the way to Blessington. It was a steam tram, and that ran, I think it ran up to 19, probably 19, I think it might be 1932 or
Lot of people
something.
using it.
Yes, apparently a lot of people used it because it was very cheap to go on it. Like, apparently it wasn't very dear to go on it. It was operated by steam.
Would Blessington be regarded as being way out in the country, a
Yeah, you see,
country town?
Blessington was a fair. There was a fair held in Blessington in the street, and that was the attraction in Blessington. Blessington and Naas were places where they held a fair. There was a fair day, And of course, like everybody went to it. They brought pigs, cattle, horses, and everything, and they sold them on the street before the sales yard came at all. They brought them in. Now, in Dublin, we had the cattle market on the North Circular Road, where they sold pigs, sheep, and cattle. And that went in the 1960s when the sales yard started opening up. But before that, people from here would drive the cattle from here into the North Circular Road.
And places like Saggart and
Saggart was a mill, and there was a pub, only a few shops in it. Saggart was just a country village. That's really what Saggart was, a country village. There was a mill in Saggart.
And Ratcool?
Ratcool, before the Nace Road was built, the main traffic went through Ratcool village. Ratcool was another one where you had they call it the Putchin Still now, the pub. You had shops in it too. It was just a little village on the main road to Cork. That's really all it was.
And British?
British, the only thing that was in British was one pub, the Blue Gardenia. British, now there's, I remember there was a post office in British where the telephone operated from. And actually, I worked on the changeover, I think it was 1970, from Magneto to Otto. And the people up there weren't terrible happy because instead of now ringing the post office and saying, get me the vet, oh, he's not at home, he's up at Morris O'Keefe, I get him there for you. Now they had to dial their own numbers. And I think that was about 19...
So you brought that down
1969. That was one of the last, I think it was probably the last Magneto system in Dublin, the old thing where you turn the handle to ring them, to get a number. And that I think was probably, I remember putting in a little switchboard into Crookesling. It was a sanatorium then. And the other thing that I didn't mention the last day we were talking, Sancta Maria School, that was a hospital until 1960 up here in Ballyroan.
Yeah.
It was what they called during the war a preventorium. I think it was more, we used to call it as kids, we used to call it a fever hospital. It was more for children at risk, I think, of contacting some of the diseases that they were brought up there. But like...
A kind of a TB place, was it?
I think it could have been more diphtheria and fevers rather. Like, yeah. We were on a pain of our life not to go near it. Like, you know, that's when we were kids, because, like, we played in the fields all the time and we warned, like, not to go near it. But that's
kind of a sanatorium.
Yeah, that was up to 1960. And they had all the...
Running it?
Would it be the Mercy Nuns? Sancta Maria, St. Mary's.
Yeah.
I think it might have been the Mercy Nuns. They had a big farm there. They owned all the land.
Did you know people coming and going in there?
No, because the entrance to that was on Ballyboden Road, right. You see. So we would have no... Other than when we went across the fields to school, when we came out, we could take a shortcut out onto Ballyboden Road through a gate beside the entrance to it. And, you know, you might see them going in and out of there. But that was just something that... it's been a secondary school now, a girls' secondary school, since 1960.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has the building changed?
It probably has. Said it's been the nuns have sold. They sold the convent house, and the grounds, most of the grounds, to the GAA.
Yeah.
And they have it now. There's a protection order on the house, and the GAA, the local GAA club, they bought some of the fields and the orchard and the old convent. Yeah. The convent actually was an ordinary two story house.
Yeah,
and they bought it. So the nuns now live in. They bought a bungalow down the road here from me, and they bought a guest house around on the Butterfield Avenue, which they moved into. And between them now, I think there's 11, and I think between them they occupy the two houses.
So the religious orders around here would have been the Carmelites, both in Fir House and the Carmelites in
yeah, and the Augustinians in Orla College.
And
the Augustinians, they were up in Orla College.
Yeah,
and yeah, and they're also now over in Ballyboden. But they're still in Orla College.
And do you know, I suppose when you think back, Turnure College, it's there 150 years now, next year.
That's right.
It hasn't changed that much.
No, it hasn't changed that much. No, in actual fact, they built a new church about 1958, I think. Before that, we used to go to Mass down there on a Sunday because you could get on the bike and hop down there at 7 o'clock in the morning. The church was within the building. It was like a hall. that they said mass in, and then they built a new church in 1960. But it hasn't changed a lot. All the cattle are gone, all are gone. Like they just use the land now for sports fields. But I can remember like when there was a farmyard at the back of it, and they kept cows and all down there. Yeah, our priest's actually in Knockline, our Carmelites from Terenure.
Yeah.
The local parish priest and the curates are Carmelites.
Are they?
They
indeed?
Are, yeah. Yes.
And so very much a changed place. And you've got such a good memory, I must say, to go back and to to recall all those places and people.
Yeah, dates and times are never really... If I know something, I'll retain it. Dates and times are not...
But what is important is that you remember you witness the event.
Yeah, that's...
And you remember it vividly.
I think that's probably one of the things, as I just say nowadays, is like my sons, when they were young, we had the cattle here all right. Peter next door, now one of my sons built a house next door, and he called that hayfield house. And why? Because this is what he remembers. He remembers the horses drawing the hay in.
And you've got a haycock here in a photograph standing right beside your house.
Yeah, that's right.
A haystack rather than a haycock.
That was a rick of hay. That was the remains of last year's rick. Here, that's the fields now crossing Lansdowne, and I think it's a cow in the field out across here.
Photograph taken how long ago?
That was taken in 1955, because the roof was repaired in 1955, so that was taken 1955. That one was taken. That's what I was just wondering if you wanted, would that be any advantage for you?
But finally, Michael, looking back over all those long years, you now see a different Dublin. You now live in a totally different environment altogether.
It's totally different. It's a different era. At times, I just say, I feel sorry for the young people of today because of the social conditions that they live under. We didn't have the same pressures as they did. I mean, we were probably our late teens when we started going dancing in town, and you got on a bike and you cycled into Parnell Square, left the day, you come out at 1 o'clock and the bike was there and you cycled home. But you couldn't do that nowadays. And then, like, there's also the problem nowadays, like when you see these rows with drink fueled rows and all that sort of thing, like that's, I'm sure they were done in my time, but I didn't see them. Certainly not around here now, that we wouldn't have seen them. And like when we went to a dance in town, we went to the National Ballroom or the Irish Club or some place like that, and you went in and you had your dance and you come out and you got up on your bikes and you cycled home, and like you weren't involved. But nowadays it's totally...
Michael Brennan, thank you very much for taking me on that journey. Indeed, thank you very
much. That one